On November 26, 2019, the government of British Columbia introduced legislation aimed at adopting the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. The stated purpose is to ensure that all laws in BC affirm the rights of Indigenous peoples. When introduced, it was celebrated on both sides of the House as a significant step forward. Bill 41-2019 passed unanimously with a caveat. That being, concerns were voiced in the House by Ellis Ross, the Liberal MLA for Skeena, and a former chief counselor for the Haisla First Nation. In the House, Ross questioned the meaning of the Declaration's guarantee of free, prior, and informed consent to First Nations over land and resource development within their traditional territories, and the need to introduce the legislation. Ross asked, if there are two parties at the table, First Nations and the Crown, and the First Nation doesn't agree, what happens? Does the Crown still go ahead and make a decision based on the interests of BC as a whole? Or do they just withhold their decision? Making no decision is still a decision. Ross went on to ask, isn't that a form of a veto? We invited Mr. Ross to join us for a conversation that matters about UNDRIP, what it means, the implications and the path forward. This is the first in a series of more than 10 conversations that we recorded at the Finding a Path to Shared Prosperity conference in mid-January that will be published on the Conversations That Matter YouTube channel.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Ellis Ross, welcome to Conversations That Matter.
Thank you for having me here.
One of the conversations and one of the reasons that I started this show is I looked at the relationship between peoples in Canada, especially First Nations and the government of Canada, and said to myself, we've got to work this out. And so along the way, I met you. I've interviewed you before. I've interviewed Bill Gallagher. I've seen the changing landscape in law. And now, many, many years after it was issued, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People has been adopted in the BC legislature. From your perspective, did we need to do that based on all the progress that we've been seeing through the courts and in societal ways as well? Or was UNDRIP needed?
No, it wasn't needed. Basically, case law had already defined to a certain extent what the relationship should look like between the Crown and First Nations. And we were actually seeing progress for the last 12 years. Mm-hmm. The Forest and Range Agreements was actually done through the provincial government to say, we're going to take back some of the tenure from forest license holders, and we're going to give it to First Nations as well, revenue sharing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was for the first time in my history as an elected councillor, that was the first time that we were engaged in the economy and we had a relationship with the Crown. Then we did the same thing with the LNG pipeline agreement. So it was steadily getting better only. And the only reason I measured the success of that is was I looked at, is it providing jobs for people to dig themselves out of poverty? So UNDRIP, did we really need it? No, because I think Canada is so far advanced already in terms of case law, as well as relationship building.
Well, and even since the issuing of UNDRIP by the UN, we of course have had the Silcotine decision, which has entrenched in law virtually everything that we see in UNDRIP, plus ensuring that it is in law now, because this has been the landmark court case that forevermore changes the relationship between people who have a traditional and hereditary stake in the land and anybody else who wants to work with them in the development of the resources there.
Well, Chilcotin actually gave a level of control unprecedented to the Chilcotin people. I don't understand whether or not they've still reconciled that with BC title and the Crown, but for the rest of us, Chilcotin basically hired the level of consultation mm-hmm. that the Crown had to do with First Nations. In my band, I was lucky enough to convince my council and to convince my people. We had already developed a good plan. It already had been probably 6 years in the making. We should just stick to our plan and actually use that Chilcotin case to actually further our relationship with the Crown. Mm-hmm. And it worked.
Right. So for you, as the you pronounce it Chilcotin. I had been told that it was Silcotin, but...
Chilcotin is the way I originally used to pronounce it.
Right. While that case was working its way through the courts, you had also been actively involved in negotiations around the Northern Gateway Pipeline,
yes,
which gave you a real blueprint, I guess, an insight into how you develop that kind of consultation.
Yes.
What does consultation, because people go, okay, well, what does it look like now? Like when we take a look at Canadian law, not UNDRIP, but Canadian law, what does the you know, pre and prior informed consent, consultation, ooh, and... there has to be a partnership or a collaboration. What does it look like now? What does that process look like?
Well, you know, a judge talking about rights and title was trying to explain to it, and I thought about it, and I think you almost got to think about Aboriginal rights and title in the abstract. And I read it, what a judge said about it once, and it said, you can't really explain it, you can't see it, but you know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was always confused about reading case law principles that seem to contradict each other and didn't seem to make any sense. I still don't fully understand it, but I knew what it wasn't. So when Enbridge came along, I kept warning and advising the Canadian government. I kept advising Enbridge, this is not it. I don't know what consultation accommodation is, but this is not it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really got to be listening to what we're saying. You got to incorporate that into your plan. And you can't just let us blow off steam and just walk away and do whatever you wanted. So I warned them every step of the way. And so when LNG came in, you know, they made it a point, look, we're not going to make the same mistakes everybody else did. We're going to do this right. So what went wrong? What do we need to see now? So LNG is a perfect example of how a company came in partnership with the provincial government, said, look, we're going to do this honorably, like how the courts told us to do it. And so every single issue, right down to the minute detail, was covered.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm not saying that that is what the consultation record should look like, but really consider on both sides that you've got to sit down at the table and you got to be honorable. The consultations have to be meaningful on both sides.
So now we move forward. So we've been moving through that process. What does that consultation and negotiation look like with a major pipeline like Northern Gateway? Then how does it play itself out in light of Silcotin and the development of LNG in Canada and the Coastal GasLink project? Now along comes the introduction of the framework around UNDRIP into the BC legislation. And it's just almost as though it's like we've gone in and riled up the pot again.
Yeah, and very vague statements around what is UNDRIP and what it isn't. But I think I questioned this in the legislation. Now I'm starting to see it come out in terms of the LNG pipeline as well. I think the government's finding out that you've got to obey the rule of law as mm-hmm. government.
Right.
You got to obey legislation. You got to obey policies as government. And as well, you've got to understand there's already case law principles established, well established, for the last, 30 years. And if you end up going to court for UNDRIP, I'm thinking that the judge will say, no, UNDRIP does not apply here because we've already established that principle in Haida
mm-hmm.
or Taku or one of these other court cases.
And Delgamuukw as well, right?
Yeah, and some of the UNDRIP principles actually don't make any sense when you're talking about the honor of the crown. It just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you talk about lawmaking, for example, BC government has got to make laws, they got to abide by laws, and they got to make sure it's consistent for everybody in BC and Canada. So UNDRIP, I don't think, really took into consideration the ability for a country to have laws. I mean, you start giving lawmaking authority out to everybody, no matter what your background is, I think you're setting yourself up for a lot of lawlessness.
Mm-hmm. So I'll get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be right back. Conversations That Matter is brought to you by Odlum Brown, a client-focused investment firm that starts client relationships with straightforward conversations focused on you, your aspirations, and your investment priorities. Odlum Brown has been a supporter of Conversations That Matter from the day we started this show. Their only condition was that we provide a non-biased conversation with people from all sides of all sorts of issues. And of course, we couldn't produce this show without the support of Oh Boy Productions. If you're looking to produce a show like this one, I suggest you reach out to Oh Boy. They can help you produce it, and they can help you build your audience. And we also need your support. I ask you to please pledge $1 per show by going to conversationsthatmatter.tv/donate, because those dollars add up and play an important role in helping us produce this show. Now, back to the show. Let's come back to this. Mm-hmm. When we take a look at the introduction of UNDRIP and how it has now given this sense that, oh, well, now the principles that are expressed in the United Nations Declaration will supersede Canadian law, which is already in place. So when I read Silcotine, there is still a provision in there that says when the Crown has exhausted every single avenue for negotiation, if it in its determination it says no, this meets the needs of the greater overall population, the Crown then still has the authority to move forward.
Even the Premier basically said, well, when we're talking about UNDRIP, we're actually talking about nothing can really be retroactive. Well, that's a principle of case law.
Mm-hmm.
That's already established in the courts of BC and Canada. So nothing that I've really said, seen coming out of the provincial government actually surprises me in the position they're taking.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're using Section 35 as well as the case law as their foundation. And this is what I tried to warn about in the legislature. And it's causing more problems than not, because it heightened expectations for everybody. Everybody thought everybody thought there's going to be new rules and new laws, and I just don't see that happening. It's a framework bill.
Mm-hmm.
Is basically an empty bill. It's just a statement of principles in terms of a commitment to do something in the future.
The question, of course, comes up is that, you know, we have hereditary chiefs who play a very important role in all communities, and then we have elected band councils. And so this is the structure that we're living under. There are some people who point fingers at it and go, yeah, but that's a colonial construct that was imposed upon us.
Yeah.
But that's the reality of where we're at. We can't completely undo everything.
Yeah. It's kind of an insult to say that, well, every First Nation has had the Indian Act imposed them to annihilate the Indian. That's not true. My band actually petitioned the government for Indian Act style governance.
They did.
I saw the petition. They actually signed a document, and it was understandable back then. But to say that it's only just territorial leadership that I have to say, people are insulting elected leaders in First Nation communities, saying, well, the only jurisdiction they have is on reserve to issue dog licenses. That's an insult to my own band council. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many band councils actually look after everything they can to actually provide a future for the people, education, social services, infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
rights and title. They look after everything.
Right.
And so to kind of insult them like that is demeaning. It actually puts us back. It doesn't provide for a very good conversation going forward.
A couple of years ago, I was up in some of the communities that the Coastal GasLink line will pass through, communities that had negotiated agreements with the pipeline. I asked why. Why did you agree to allowing the pipeline to come through your traditional territories? One counselor said, well, right over there is a natural gas line that's been running through our territory for 60 years.
Yeah.
He said, we never received a penny for any of that. Yeah. Nobody ever asked us. And he said, and I still, this is within one of the Wet'suwet'en nations, he said, I still have to drive into Burns Lake and buy propane because I can't get natural gas to heat my house.
Wow.
He said, that's going to change.
Yeah.
And that's what this is about. You know, this is about giving us an opportunity, one, to provide employment so that people can lift themselves out of poverty.
Yeah.
And two, enhance the quality of life, but as importantly, provide money for the restoration of cultural education for the youth of tomorrow.
Yeah. I do. I heard a saying long ago that you'll lose your culture and language quicker in poverty than you will with acquiring wealth.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, I totally agree with that, because even today, First Nations have so much lateral violence against each other. Don't even talk to me about any violence or intimidation tactics mm-hmm. coming from the non-natives. So in my position, I truly believe that the natives today need help with their gas, their heating, their truck, their house that they want, their mortgage they want to get. And for the position I take, I'm called an assimilated into the colonialist culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I point out that, wait a minute, if I'm assimilated, if I'm advocating for the colonialist way of life, how many of you can say that you're not doing the same? Because these are all colonialist things I'm using today. My mortgage, my house, colonialist structure, my paved roads, the hospital services. I mean, if we're going to get beyond this conversation, then we've got to stop the lateral violence. And we've got to admit that actually the colonialism mm-hmm. has actually provided us a better way of life. And it was actually our ancestors that adopted it because life was tough. I don't see anybody going wanting to go back in the bush and, you know, killing a deer and making their clothes out of it, you know, shunning electricity, shunning fossil fuels and trucks and cars and hospitals and all. I don't see anybody doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to take a realistic look in terms of what Aboriginal people are facing today.
Dan George from Burns Lake pointed out to me, he said, you know, you have to realize that when the Indian Act changed the landscape, we were told, okay, yeah, this is your traditional territory, but that's the worst part of it. That's where you're going to live.
Yeah. We're no different. We're no different.
Yeah. And so he said it's swampland. So people say, well, get a job, go do something.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that easy. And so at times you have to, and I think it's the same, no matter where you go, you have to reach outside of your own jurisdiction and say, okay, well, how can we make this work so that collectively we all win? And is that really not what the principles of Silcoteen and even UNDRIP are all saying? We have to work together.
Yeah, but only in terms of Crown First Nations relationship. I still agree the First Nations have got to reconcile. And by the way, when we were displaced, my band was displaced from its village there for industry.
Mm-hmm.
The Indian agent who was supposed to be representing us actually said to the certain chunk of land, give it to the Indians. It's not even good for agriculture. It's just rock and sand. And that's part of the record.
And that's where the village is now?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you got to go all the way up and around and out of town to get into Haisla, band territory.
Yeah.
It's a long way out.
And there's a little creek there that actually provides the water for us. But originally, we were beside the Kitimat River, the biggest river in our territory.
Yes.
Provided all the... So it always made me wonder, what are we doing over on this side? And then I realized, looking through the records, that's what... But in today's day and age, given the rights and title that's been established in the courts of BC and Canada... I came to the conclusion that today the Indian Act is irrelevant. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's an artificial boundary.
Well, it's changed so much in the courts anyways.
Yeah. I mean, that archaic system of the Indian Act, nobody abides by it anymore. The only thing there is the funding agreement to transfer payments that come from Ottawa to their First Nation. But other than that, it really doesn't matter.
So when it comes to reconciliation, it is a term that it's a bit odd because what exactly does it mean? What does it mean to you?
Well, I first read the term when I was reading case law, and the judge was saying, we've got to reconcile Aboriginal title with Crown title because let's face it, none of us are going anywhere.
And that's the key point, isn't it?
That's the key point.
Yeah.
I mean, this idea that somehow natives get control, we're going to kick out all the white people or we're going to stop showing, that's not actually true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got to face it. We all enjoy the hospitals, the highways, the shopping, the clothes, the cell phone. We all enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
So over the years, I had to come to the conclusion that reconciliation is just a political term. Because when I go back home, I have non-Native family. I have non-Native friends. I have African friends, East Indian friends, Libyans. And not once in my day-to-day life do I meet them and say, hey, we got to reconcile. Not once. It never comes up.
Right.
So reconciliation is more of a political term. And I think it's got more to do with dealing with Aboriginal rights and title more than anything. Now, when the political body gets involved with that and uses it for their own means, which is getting elected,
mm-hmm.
it sounds great. But I add some caution. Be careful because reconciliation can get out of control if you just take it down a political road without looking at the substance of case law. Or legislation or policy.
The concept on the whole, though, says that we recognize that we're all here together and that we have figured out a way that we all get to benefit from the bounty of this incredible land.
Yes.
From your perspective, how are we doing from in that regard?
We've been doing great.
Yeah.
I mean, for when the Haida Court case came out in 2004, nobody understood what it meant. First Nations didn't understand it, government, industry, nobody. So we kind of, for a couple of years, we kind of picked our way through it.
And there was a tremendous amount of fear, too.
There was.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody thought that development was going to die out, but companies figured it out, government figured it out, and said, look, all it really means is we got to do our best to consult and accommodate. Mm-hmm. And so the result is the Forest and Range Agreement that's been alive and well in northern BC for 12 years.
Yes.
Peace in the woods. And then we got every First Nation community from Prince George to Kitimat, and even one community down channel that signed on. Now, this is the result of good consultation, good accommodation. And then now we're starting to, we got the potential to go backwards because nobody understands UNDRIP. Because UNDRIP is just a statement of a number of principles that actually don't take into consideration the principles already been established in our own courts.
Right.
And it doesn't consider the amount of effort, tremendous effort, put in by industry and government in the last 12 years to kind of actually breathe life into Section 35 of the Constitution. We've been doing great.
So is your fear that we've been on the cusp of real progress that can lead to prosperity for people and that we run the risk of disrupting that progress?
Without a doubt. I mean, the prosperity in Kitimat, in the Skeena region, we're already seeing it. I mean, there's a lot of First Nations that come from all over BC to come to work on the LNG project. They're seeing it. It's a $40 billion project with First Nations at the table that are going to get payments, revenue payments. They're going to get jobs. They're going to get contracts. But it's going to come down to leadership. I just don't understand why we've taken the political road through UNDRIP when we've actually established so much progress. And for me, the progress, I measure progress in a number of different ways, and there's a lot of different categories. But to me, it's, okay, how are the young people dealing with their life situations? And today, what I'm seeing, the younger generation has no clue or no interest in talking about the Indian Act.
Mm-hmm.
They got no interest in talking about the Truth and Reconciliation because they got jobs, they're providing for their family, they're going to Mexico, they're going to Vegas, they're getting a mortgage. And that's my goal. You should acknowledge the past. It's recorded for future generations. But the reality, we got to get our kids a better future. And that's been working for the last 12 years.
Well, to me, that's the fundamental thing. How do we provide opportunity so that people can realize their full potential? Different potential for every person, but in the realizing of their own potential, everybody benefits.
And this way you do it where you're not asking government to fix it because government can't fix it. There's not enough money in the world to fix it. If that was the case, it would have been fixed decades ago. Government needs consultation accommodation principles, and it's being proven here in BC.
Right. Thank you for coming in and sharing that.
Thank you.
Yeah.